Alexandra Payan from Hawaii.
Good morning. She said, my name is Alexandra Payan, and I was a CST fellow with the tuberculosis branch in Hawaii. And today I'm going to share with you the results of our evaluation of hemoglobin A1Cs in tuberculosis patients with diabetes in Hawaii. So tuberculosis is a bacterial infection of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, and it is spread through the air and primarily causes infections in the lungs, although it can cause infection anywhere in the body. Tuberculosis can present as either symptomatic and infectious active disease or as a non-infectious latent infection. One-third of the world's population is estimated to be infected with TB, but only 5 to 10% of those will develop active disease in their lifetime. The current case rate in the United States is 3.0 per 100,000, but among foreign-born individuals, the case rate is 15 per 100,000. Diabetes is a known risk factor for tuberculosis, with the risk of active TB 3 times greater among those with diabetes. Globally, 15% of all TB cases are attributed to diabetes, and this will only continue to rise with the rate of diabetes. Diabetes has also been associated with poor TB treatment outcomes, including delayed sputum culture conversion, which is an indication of poor response to treatment, and increased risks of relapse or death. The WHO currently recommends diabetes screening among all adult TB patients. In Hawaii, 39% of adults with tuberculosis also have diabetes. This is compared with just 8% in the general population in the state. Since 2012, the Hawaii TB Control Branch has routinely screened all adult TB cases for diabetes using hemoglobin A1Cs. Patients with a history of diabetes or a hemoglobin A1C of 6.5% or greater are enrolled in a diabetes management program that includes frequent glucose testing, hemoglobin A1C testing every 3 months, diabetes clinic referrals, and individualized diabetes education. To evaluate our current diabetes program, we examined the change in hemoglobin A1C during TB treatment. We enrolled 50 patients who were treated for TB at Launa Kila Chest Clinic in Honolulu in 2013 and 2014, and who had at least 2 recorded hemoglobin A1Cs during treatment. Chart reviews were conducted to collect data on glucose test results, referrals, and diabetes education. We calculated a diabetes management score to quantify effort and analyzed the change in hemoglobin A1Cs using ANOVA and independent impaired t-tests. 92% of our study population were foreign-born, with 63% of those born in the Philippines and 26% born in other Pacific Islands. Diabetes was newly diagnosed in 18% of our participants. Overall, the initial mean hemoglobin A1C was 8.7%. We divided patients into 3 categories based on their initial hemoglobin A1C to serve as an indicator of initial glucose control. Our lowest group were those with initial hemoglobin A1C of 6.5 to 7.4%, and that was 42% of the participants. The second group, 7.5 to 8.9%, and 26% of our participants, and the highest group were those with the initial hemoglobin A1C of 9.0 or higher, and that was 32% of participants. We found no correlation between changes in hemoglobin A1C and the diabetes management effort. This graph shows the change in overall mean hemoglobin A1C for all participants. We observed a significant change of 0.5% in mean hemoglobin A1C with a final mean hemoglobin A1C of 8.2%. When comparing the change in mean hemoglobin A1C in our 3 groups, you can see that the largest and only significant change was observed in those with initial hemoglobin A1C of 9.0 or greater. On average, those individuals had a decrease of 2% in their hemoglobin A1Cs. Those with the best controlled glucose initially, 6.5 to 7.4%, actually had an increase in mean hemoglobin A1C of 0.3%, although this was not a significant result. Using 182 hemoglobin A1Cs collected throughout treatment, we graphed the mean change from initial hemoglobin A1C in 4 time segments, 0 to 30, 31 to 120, 121 to 180, and greater than 180 days from the start of treatment. As you can see, those with the initial hemoglobin A1C of 9.0 or greater, shown in green on the graph, were the only group to show improvement, and their hemoglobin A1Cs decreased throughout treatment. There were some limitations to our study, including its relatively small sample size, with only 50 participants meeting the criteria for inclusion. We also had inconsistent timing of hemoglobin A1C testing, especially with the final test. Ideally, a hemoglobin A1C would be administered at admission to clinic and then again on the last day of treatment. There was also inconsistent charting of diabetes management activities by clinic staff. While a worksheet has been developed to monitor diabetes progress and for reporting of diabetes effort. Only 30% of the charts included in this evaluation even had the form. One of the major challenges of the TB diabetes program has been getting case managers to shift thinking from solely in addressing TB to also including diabetes as part of their case management. Based on our results, diabetes can be significantly improved during TB treatment. Besides the overall reduction in mean hemoglobin A1C, we observed a decrease in hemoglobin A1C of 0.5% or greater in 52% of all participants. Some of this improvement is likely attributable to the curing of TB, since it is known to cause hypoglycemia. Individuals with poor glucose control demonstrate the most benefit during treatment. This indicates that diabetes education may be the most beneficial if targeted to those with poor glucose control. Further research with improved adherence to a more structured diabetes education program is needed to better understand the effect of TB treatment on glucose control. And I'd just like to thank my co-authors as well as the nursing staff at Lonicula Chest Clinic.
But this had to do with the group that had hemoglobin A1C over 9%.
Yep.
And I'm looking, I was interested in terms of the diabetes education. Was that a structured program? Was that through a nutritionist or an educator? What?
Yeah, so we use a program that was actually developed for use in the Pacific Islands by the Australian Respiratory Council. So it's like a flip chart, and it targets like diet and exercise and things like that. And so the nurses are ideally supposed to go through that with them every time. And also we use DOT, so directly observed therapy. So we have most of our patients see medical aid 3 to 5 times a week. And they're also supposed to do that activities. How much is done is questionable, but yeah.
Okay, so adherence was, we're not really sure, but
yes.
So the education came through from the nurses or the doctor themselves who saw the patient?
Yes.
Then. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
We have time for another question, if anyone has one. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I was just curious. I this is new to me. And I wanted to know whether this program came, did it originate like with your diabetes program or your tuberculosis program or both or like?
Yeah, so this is originated with our TB program. So this is all done by our TB staff. And that is definitely one of the biggest challenges. Getting infectious disease people to see that this is a chronic disease issue, not really in their wheelhouse. And we're trying to do better integration with the diabetes program there. But, yeah, this is all in-house in the TB clinic.
Thank you very much.